The Navy's USS Treyer has been called the unluckiest ship in the fleet because it's constantly under attack. At least it feels that way to new recruits. They spend 12 hours on this $60 million training ship as part of a simulation that mimics the chaos and fear of war.
We have been hit by a missile, midships on the starboard side.
Open it, get out of the way, go! Fire, 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 water on! Your ship is burning and you are wasting time!
The ship is flooded and on fire and filled with smoke, so the exercise looks and feels like a real disaster. And that's the idea. The military is hoping that these kinds of simulations will help prevent post-traumatic stress disorder by prepping its members' brains for what war is really like. Reader's Digest recently reported on what's called the warrior brain. David Noonan is national affairs editor at the magazine. And David, would you explain the theory behind these training exercises?
Well, first you have to understand the context. We've had about 2.5 million soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we've had about an estimated 300,000 cases of PTSD diagnosed. So it's a big number, and it's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. And the Department of Defense has really recognized the fact that it has a major crisis on its hands, and they've been spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to do a couple of things, figure out effective ways to treat PTSD, and the stuff that we wrote about in Reader's Digest, looking at ways to possibly prevent it. Now, the USS Treyer is a very high-tech simulation of a naval attack. There's also something called Battle Mind, which is an simulation of an IED attack on a Humvee. And these are intended to expose the recruits to combat conditions, to teach them that they can trust their training, that they can actually do their jobs, perform first aid, execute whatever orders they're supposed to be executing under combat conditions. It also introduces them to fear and stress under combat conditions.
So a normal fear response would be there's some elevated level of chemical in the brain. When the chemical goes down, you're better. But in cases of PTSD, is the issue that that chemical level is never going down or not going down enough?
Well, PTSD, what you get, the brain is flooded by hormones. Cortisol is one of them. And you can actually get a thing called cortisol poisoning, which is basically a toxic phenomenon. It can actually affect brain tissue. What's interesting is that the post 9/11 conflicts are almost a formula for PTSD. You've got combatants embedded among civilian populations who are using unconventional weapons like IEDs. You've also got repeated tours with insufficient time to kind of recover between tours. So it's a perfect storm to create maximum stress, fear response, relentless fear, unrelenting fear response, and it can lead to PTSD.
So in that sense, the Navy is not only trying to prevent PTSD, but it's having to treat it. And as the Reader's Digest article describes, it's doing that by exposing military members to close-ups of angry faces and restricting their breathing and just generally stressing them out. So explain how that's working, how that's treating PTSD.
We looked at the research into how stress and fear affect the brain. There's one scientist who throws people out of airplanes with sensors all over their heads and sees how they respond. And what she found is that there is a select group of people who have a sort of optimal fear response. In other words, most people, if you throw them out of an airplane, they're going to be concerned about one thing only, which is getting on the ground as fast as possible. But there is a small part of the population who can function under these sort of, they have what she calls the warrior brain. They can think clearly during the stressful period. And then when the stressful period ends, their fear response returns to a normal baseline.
Is part of the ideal warrior brain someone who can basically override fear? And is that really what ultimately the military wants, people who are immune to fear?
No, because, you know, no fear response, that's not good either, because fear is a natural and necessary response. You don't want someone who's fearless because they'll put themselves in danger and they may put their fellow soldiers in danger. We looked at the Navy SEALs training. First of all, they have an 18-month training program. So they select the cream of the crop and then they spend 18 months training.
In a very severe environment.
In a very severe environment. What we found really interesting about the SEALs is you would think we all know that they're physically, you know, they're great physical specimens. They're strong. They have incredible endurance. But the thing that really helps identify the guys who are going to make it isn't their physical strength. It's how well they do on a cognitive test, specifically a part of the test called the adversity tolerance section. And these are the guys who have the ability to manage stress, to manage adversity, and to continue to function under extraordinarily stressful conditions.
And then what do they do with that information, and how can that be applied to cases of PTSD?
Well, the SEALs training, most of it is classified. But we do know that a large part of their training is, in fact, psychological. It's mental. And some of the stuff is things that you would find in a self-help book, compartmentalizing trauma, visualization.
Meditation,
all those things that help anyone deal with any given stressful situation. They actually, of course, they learn to use those techniques while they're doing things like, you know, raiding Osama bin Laden's compound. As far as the application to preventing PTSD, I think what the military ultimately wants to do is to be able to develop and incorporate into their training program, similar to what the SEALs are doing, where you can expose recruits to stressful situations, but you also want to arm them with the psychological tools, the mental tools that they need to recognize that they need to function at maximum capacity during the stressful situation, and when it ends, they need to put it behind them and move on.
Your story mentions that if we go way back to samurai warriors, even they used meditation to try to cope with war. So what's new about what's happening now?
What's new here is the brain science. I think that they're using, you know, brain imaging, and they're really looking at the anatomy, and they're looking at the brain chemistry, and they're trying to understand and measure what goes on in the brain while it's being stressed so that they can use that knowledge to help soldiers develop their resiliency. One of our researchers thinks of resilience. He asked himself, is resilience similar to a muscle? Can it be strengthened? And he has found with a small group of Marines who had already been diagnosed with PTSD that, in fact, he is able to strengthen their resilience the same way he would strengthen their bicep.
These treatments the military is using, in which it immerses people who have PTSD into fearful situations in hopes that they can learn to get over them, basically. Is there a risk that those people could end up being more traumatized?
There's always a risk. You know, the success rate is about 40% for the current treatment. The goal is to get them to understand that they're not on the battlefield anymore and that they don't need to respond the way they did when they were in Iraq or Afghanistan.
David Noonan is National Affairs Editor for Reader's Digest. For a link to the magazine's article, Warrior Brain, go to hereandnow.org. David, thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Tomorrow on Here and Now, if fewer people are following your posts on Facebook, don't feel bad. It may be due to a Facebook policy change and not about you. That's tomorrow. Before we go today, some Handyman Blues with Billy Bragg. This is Here and Now.